Hey everybody, welcome back to App Dev on Xbox. Hope you've enjoyed the material so far. Today we've talked to you about developing your app for Xbox, making it look the best that it can on Xbox, and a bunch of different technologies that we have available to you. Now it's time to get your app in the store. So, my name is Brandon Hurlbert. I'm a senior software development engineer here at Microsoft, and we're going to talk about what the process looks like to submit your UWP app that you've written that works on mobile, desktop, even HoloLens, and of course Xbox, up to the Dev Center or the Windows Store. So we've talked about the promise of UWP, how you can run it on all sorts of different platforms, adapt it to natural language and natural user interfaces. We've talked about configuration and updates and how the one store and the one Dev Center provides your customers the one place to get their applications and buy add-ons to your products. We've also talked about how every Xbox One is a UWP development device. And now, let's see how you get your app out there. So we'll start by looking at the Dev Center. And the first thing that you have to do is you have to get yourself an account on the Windows Dev Center. And that's done really easily. You go to dev.microsoft.com or dev.windows.com, and you just sign in. And when you sign in, you'll go back and you will hit get a dev account here down at the bottom, then we'll sign in. To get a dev account, all you need is a Microsoft account and a credit card. The sign up is really easy and really straightforward. We need to sign in with our developer account that we want to use. And then once you sign in, you'll be prompted for a one-time payment for individuals of $19. Or a one-time payment for corporations of $99. And after that, you don't have to worry about a thing. Everything is taken care of for you. Once you've got your Dev Center account, you come back and you're logged in, and you'll go to your dashboard. And the first thing to do once you have an idea for an app is to reserve the name. So usually what I always do is the first second that I have a great idea for an app, I'll go out and I'll reserve the name for it, because obviously I want the app to have a name that makes sense and an app name that is, you know, conveys the purpose and is a really catchy one. So to do that, you create a new app, and the first step in the process will be to reserve that name. So we're going to work with the Xbox News app today. And so I'm going to put in an app name that's hopefully won't be taken. And the first thing you do is you check availability. Of course, you get the green check mark. That means everything's okay. And you reserve the product name. Once you reserve that product name, it is available to you for 12 months until your first submission. So if you don't submit anything to this app's listing for 12 months, that app name is still yours. After 12 months, it kind of goes into this state where it can be claimed by somebody else, but it's still yours. So if in month 13, you still haven't published anything and user B comes along and wants that name, it'll be relinquished from you and given to user B. So that's something to keep in mind, is you basically have 12 months to make your first submission. After you've got your app name reserved and you're ready for your first submission, you just hit start your submission. And we'll wait here. The submission process is really laid out for you in a pretty intuitive way. So it just walks you through each of these steps for store submission. And once you, as you fill out each of the steps, it just moves you along in the process, and eventually your app will show up on the store for all of the various platforms. So without further ado, let's start in and start walking through this process. The first thing that we define is the pricing and availability. And this is exactly like it says. It's the price for your app, which is the base price tier. You can choose anywhere from free to $1, all the way up to $1,000 if you happen to create an app that you think warrants a $1,000 price tag for your users. You can also use one of the differentiating factors of the Windows Store, the trial. So this is one of the things that first kind of differentiated Windows Phone 7 when it came out, and that was that your users have a trial period, or the ability to have a trial period, so they can actually try out an app before they buy it. And a lot of users of Windows Phone early in the days really gravitated towards this experience and really like this. So if you're considering creating a for-pay app that you want people to buy, I would highly suggest that you look at creating a trial experience as well. Nobody likes to get an app just based on face value and the description and the screenshots, only to find out it doesn't do the thing that they want and they paid $2.99 or $1.99 for it. So you can create a trial that never expires. This is an idea if you want to create kind of a freemium model where you have like limited functionality in your app, but then you can add on functionality if they decide to go pay, because you do have the ability to check whether or not an app is in trial mode. You can have a 1 day, 7 day, 15 or 30 day trials. And it's interesting to note that these trial periods are managed for you by the store API. So you don't have to sit there and remember, oh, I gave them a 7 day trial or I gave them a 30 day trial. The store will take care of that for you and let them know when their trial period has expired. So we're gonna pick a 99 cent app and we're gonna give it a 7 day trial. And the store will also, since we've unified a store across a lot of our platforms, it'll also warn you when certain functionality isn't available to older platforms. Like when here it's saying Windows Phone 8.1 and earlier can't support time-limited trials. But a trial that never expires can be used across all of our platforms. The next step is to decide your market and any custom prices you may have. So we have 242 supported markets for the apps in the Windows Store. So we already talked about how there's 350 million plus Windows 10 devices out there. These are the countries in which you might find your Windows 10 devices. And this is an area that you'll want to pay special attention to when you hear news. Recently, the issues in Russia and Greece, the Windows Store team was actually really nice to us developers and sent out an email and let us know that they're not going to be going back through the currency adjustments for a little while, and they had the economic crisis in Greece. And so we may want to go in and change our price for Greece to be something maybe a little higher than just the 99 cents. So this is the place where you can do that. And you can also, if you've done that for a bunch of places and you just kind of want to reset, you can reset all the prices to base by clicking this link. You can also choose to be present or not present in any one or more countries by simply unchecking them. And then it won't be offered to users in those countries. You can select and unselect all to help yourself choose the countries that you want to be available in. A new thing that kind of came out with the Windows Store recently in Windows 10 is the ability to do sales. And this is really cool for promotional purposes. You can see it's only going to be visible for Windows 10 devices, but that also includes your Xbox One. So you can actually create a sale for your product to go on a specific start date at a start hour to an end date at an end hour, and you can select what pricing tier you want to change it to, and you can name that sale. This is the area where you'll define sales, and you can do those for every submission, for submissions going forward. You can do those for submissions later, or you can do it straight off the bat if you want to say, I'm releasing my new app, it's free for 7 days. This is the place where you can do that. Distribution and visibility is where you define whether or not your app is going to be shown in the store. So you can make it available in the store so users can search for it. They can go through categories. They can, you know, maybe see it as related app on some other app. Or you can hide the app and prevent acquisition. The pieces in the middle are only used for our older platforms. So the two that you should focus on as an Xbox One developer is whether or not you want to hide it or whether you want to show it. If you do hide it, you can still share out a direct link to say your friends or your customers, and they can see the listing. But in order to download the app, you're going to have to define a promotional code, and they'll have to be using a Windows 10 device to use promotional codes. And we'll talk about that later. With Windows 10 and, of course, Microsoft's presence in the enterprise, organizations do have the ability to do volume license purchases of apps. And this denotes whether or not you want your app to be available for those kind of volume licenses. And you can also say whether or not you want offline licensing available for organizations. Last but not least, when you publish the app, you can choose one of three ways for your app to roll through the certification and release process. The first one is obviously just as soon as everything is complete, kick that thing out there and let it start showing up in the store. The second one is once everything's validated and certified, let me click the button that will put it in the store as a listing. And the third one is what I call a gated publish, where you can say, all right, I want this to roll through, but I'm not planning my launch, my promotional materials until next Friday. So I want to gate the publishing maybe until the night before. And you can do that, and then the store will automatically push that out for you at the time that you say. Since we're rolling through as a demo and I don't actually want this app to show up in the store, I'm going to say publish this manually. When you've chosen all of the options that you want, you hit save. And then it takes you back to the submission process and shows that you've completed your pricing and availability and gives you a nice little summary for you to know exactly what it registered for your app. So then the next step, of course, is the properties. After each step, you do want to check to make sure that that green checkbox is there so that you know everything was okay. The first thing you do is you choose your category and your subcategory. And since we've merged with the Xbox Store, for this app, I'm going to choose news. And we have this note that pops up for you now. And it says that once you publish the product, you won't be able to pick the games category in a new submission. So what this basically means is this means that since you've chosen a non-game category, you can't switch to game later. So you need to determine whether or not you want this published as a game or not upfront, once and for all. And after we've picked news and weather, this of course is a news app, so we'll pick the news subcategory. This next step is kind of leveling up with Microsoft, and this is where you define what different capabilities your app might have that Microsoft needs to know about. So the first one is whether or not you allow your users to make purchases, but you don't use the Windows Store Commerce system. A good illustration of this is a hosted web app that we've talked about already in this event that might have a cart in it that people can add items to the cart and then check out with PayPal. You'd need to check this box so that you can let the store team know you're using a third-party commerce system and it's not the Windows Store Commerce system. Situations like that will be okay, but it is part of the terms and conditions that any digital goods that are purchased, you can't have a third-party commerce system that sells the coins for your game, for instance. It is part of the terms and conditions that you have that inside your app using the Windows Store APIs. Whether or not you tested your product to meet accessibility guidelines, Microsoft is very big on accessibility. We like to make sure that the folks who need stuff like high contrast screens or narrative screens have the ability to get those. And so we like to showcase and point out apps that have those accessibility guidelines. So you can choose that as an option as well. The last two are kind of up to you as to where you want your data to show up. If you're a little bit concerned about security, you might not want to allow users to have it on removable storage. And if you don't want your data included in an automatic backup to OneDrive, you might uncheck those boxes. The default is to allow people to put it on removable storage and back up their data for OneDrive. Of course, this just enhances their experience by allowing them not to stuff up their phone's storage or lose any data when they migrate to a new device. The system requirements is a recommendation, and you basically are saying that this is the minimum that is required to use my app, and this is the recommendation that I have for using my app. So the store looks at a device's capabilities and will provide warnings to users if they're going to download your app on a device that might provide them a less than optimal experience. So they do a pretty good job of spelling out how this works, and they may see a warning before they download your product, which is okay because they may say, I want to download this anyway. But the nice part is that they won't actually be able to review it. So somebody who downloads your game or your app onto a device that doesn't have all of the things that you think it should have for the best experience isn't going to be able to leave you a bad review. So that's something that's kind of nice about the Microsoft Dev Center. And there's a whole host of different selections that you can choose from. You can specify memory requirements, DirectX requirements, processors, and graphics. Our news app is pretty simple, so we don't really have a need to do that. So we'll save our options here, and this will take us back to the flow. Again, we've got the green checkbox, everything's good. One of the newer additions to the store is the concept of an age rating. So if you've been developing for the Windows platform for a few years now, you know that you've gotten emails recently to go back through and provide age ratings for your app. So we're working with the International Association to do age ratings, and we're providing those as listings on each store listing for an app, as well as we're using that to guide Microsoft's own family safety product for what apps can be downloaded by the children in your family. If you've already taken this questionnaire, say for another app store, you can take the IARC rating ID and put it right in and skip the whole process, which is kind of nice. We haven't for this one, so we'll walk through the process. So the rating questionnaire is pretty simple and straightforward, and it's good to know that as a developer, you're just required to do your due diligence here. As a news app, I can't control what's going to show up in my app all the time, every day, but I do know that there are some things that are probably going to show up just based of the nature of news. So a good illustration of this is we're choosing an app type of reference news or educational, and it's asking us, can it contain violent material? It can. There's very often reporting upon news or crime in areas, so yes, it can contain violent material. Can it be visually depicted? Sometimes we do have photos that show that. Can it be gross or gory? Not usually. Can it be referred to through text? Yep, there are stories written about that. And we can go through and we can go through each of the individual areas of the questionnaire as it pertains to reference news or educational. Sexuality, not usually. Controlled substances, yep, but it's not the focus of our app. And sometimes we can have depictions of illegal drugs, and sometimes they can be referred to through spoken text. Language is usually okay in news apps. Does it allow the user to interact or exchange content with other users? No, we're not a social network. We don't have the ability to send files to and from users. Does it share user-provided information with third parties? Nope. Does it share the physical location? Now, if our news app provided location-aware news, we would have to check this box, but we don't. Can we purchase digital goods? No. And again, as you're going through this questionnaire, I like to think about it in the terms of a parent, right? So a parent doesn't want their child to just be able to purchase digital goods. And that's where that question comes into as far as rating your app for an audience. You have to choose an age range for Great Britain. So we'll probably choose 15 for our app. And then South Korea asks some additional questions. We don't actively do gambling in the app. We do talk about crime, drugs, and violence for the purposes of news. So we save and generate, and this will show us the output of the IARC rating questionnaire. So you can see that the ESRB would rate this a 10+. The Windows Store gives it a 3. And then we can just hit continue. If we think that any of these ratings seem a little off, like we might want to tweak something to give it a different rating, remember, do your due diligence, but you can hit edit and refine your answers to your questions. So we hit continue, and we'll see the age ratings has been completed. It'll show you each of the individual age rating icons. And now we're on to the packages portion. The packages portion is where you get to go into Visual Studio. Visual Studio couldn't have made this any easier, really. Once you have your app ready to go, it's really as simple as a couple of clicks. You right-click on your app in the Solution Explorer. You go to Store, which makes sense, and you say Create App Packages. It walks you through a nice wizard asking if you want to build packages to upload to the store, and you, of course, say yes. At this point, if you're working on a PC that has a lot of Microsoft accounts, you want to make sure that the Microsoft account in the upper right is the one that has the app listing that you were just filling out on the Dev Center. If you already have an app in the store and you're pushing an update to that app, you want to make sure that you have the include app names that already have packages, that you check that box. Otherwise, it will just show apps that don't have any packages already submitted for them. We're going to choose the Xbox News app for the demo. And it's also worth noting that if you're one of those developers who doesn't reserve the name first, but goes through and codes the whole thing, gets a good flow, maybe develops some branding, has a really good idea of what you want to create, you can actually reserve your app name right here. I like to do it up front just so I don't lose that idea to months of coding. It would really not be fun to develop an app and have it ready to go, and then you have to search and search and search and search for a name, and then go back through and do your rebranding. So I've chosen the Xbox News app for the demo. I'm going to hit Next. And this screen has a couple of different options that we need to be aware of. The first is the version. So the version actually gets baked into your app at the time that you configure the package. You can see the automatically increment checkbox, which if we uncheck, you'll notice only affects the third digit. So this is really important to note. Automatically increment every time you build is only going to bump the third digit of the app. The reason that the fourth digit always remains zero is because the Windows Store uses a compiler in the cloud to handle any security issues that might pop up in the compiler in the future. So they require that any package uploaded by you to the store has a zero as the fourth digit. That doesn't mean you can't build with the fourth digit and give it to your friends as a sideload app or even on your test machines, but it does mean that to go up to the store, it has to start with zero as the fourth digit. And the reason being is that if that compiler, if they decide that there has been some security flaw and we need to recompile your app, they will automatically bump that fourth digit so that you know that there's a new version that's been built, it was done by the store compiler, and now your users will get this as an update because it's a version that's higher than the one they have on their machine. If and when they do that, it will usually be accompanied by an SDK release so that you'll get the compiler in the future, and the next time you do a build and a release, you will have a zero at the end there, but you'll be using whatever fix was put into the cloud compiler. We always want to generate an app bundle for the purposes of the store. It wires together all of the various architectures of releases. And there's also a note here guiding you saying that the store is only going to accept generated AppX upload packages. All other packages you might generate out of this tool, if you say no bundle, all other packages will only be for sideloading. The other cool thing is you can include full PDB files in your build so that you can instrument your app and provide real stack traces from your users should you have any crashes. So you don't have to rely on, you know, the cryptic stack traces that you might get from a truly release-built version of the app. So I always like to recommend that we check that box to get the most robust crash reporting should we need it in the future. Once we hit Create, Visual Studio is going to take off, and this is going to compile your app in release mode using the .NET Native compiler. And I like to point that out because when you build for store, one of the things you're going to notice first is the amount of time it takes to compile your app. And that's because it's running through .NET Native compilation down to machine language. It's also bundling together all of the .NET runtime and .NET Core that you're using for your UWP. Because this can take quite a bit of time, we'll go to one that I've already built. And I'm going to switch to a different screen here. And now, again, couldn't have made it any easier. You take the bundle that you've built, and you just drag and drop it onto the store page. You'll see that it does some processing of the bundle as it uploads. It analyzes the package. And then it will, right now it's validating the package to make sure everything's good, and then it will show you what it interpreted. And that's a good place to do a sanity check. So we'll wait for this to complete. So after that completes, the store API and the store UI have done kind of an analysis on your package. And they've said, you put in your package Windows Universal, and so we'll automatically select desktop and mobile for you. But for the purposes of our talk, we also want this to go on Xbox. And because we know that our news app is absolutely gorgeous, let's put it on HoloLens as well. Should you decide to build maybe separate branches of your code and create specific packages just for specific platforms, this is the place where you would manage where those, what device families those get put on. Similarly, if you have an app that you've been working on for a number of years, and it works on Windows Phone 8.1, Windows 8.1, Windows Phone 7 and you upload a new universal package, this is where you'll manage those different packages, the ones that you build for your Windows 8X devices and the ones that you build for Windows 10. This matrix will very quickly grow and show you package X that you built over here belongs to Windows 8 and 8.1, package Y belongs to Windows Phone, and package Z belongs to the universal platform. They've also got a really good legend here to show you, as you grow out this matrix and maybe have a more complex listing, how everything gets distributed through the store and what families stuff will land on. Down here, you can again see that we have uploaded APX Upload. We've used version 1110. It was compiled for Windows Universal Device Family with a minimum version of 14.393. Now, 14.393 might seem like a high number, and that's because it was the SDK, the anniversary SDK, that was just released here at the beginning of August. And this is a really important thing to note. If you're building for Xbox One Universal apps, you have to build against the 14.393 SDK. And so how can we make sure that we've done that? That's done in your project under Properties. That's done under the Package APX Manifest. So you double-click the Package APX Manifest, and it gives you a host of options for your package. One of those is, or was it in Properties? I think I had that right the first time. Yes, under Application. So again, let's do that again. We'll right-click on News, we'll go to Properties, we'll go to the Application tab on the left. Over here is where it shows you the target version of the SDK that you're going to go after. And you need to have the target version as 14.393. The minimum version can be any of our previous versions, 10.240 or 10.586, but to hit Xbox, you have to have a target version of 14.393. So keep that in mind as you bring your apps forward to Xbox. So once we've uploaded our package and chosen our device families, we can go back to the listing, and this is where we'll manage the store listing languages. So now I'm going to use this app that we just uploaded the package for. We'll save that. Takes a few minutes. And the store listings area has automatically pulled out all of the languages that you said you supported in your APX manifest. So if you do add additional languages to your app, you'll know that the APX manifest changes to denote that it supports those languages. That's pulled out by the store UI, and those languages show up here. This is where kind of the meat of your store listing is put. For each language, you have to click the link under the store listings, and you have to fill out the description, release notes, and screenshots, and other information. So we'll do that. Uploading the screenshots, again, couldn't have been made more easy by the store team. For desktop screenshots, take all the desktop screenshots you want and just drag them and drop them right into the store UI. For every screenshot that you upload, you have the ability to add a caption to it, which is also really nice to show your, to maybe point out features of the screen to your users as they're browsing your store listing. These are the screenshots that show up in the Windows Store app for the listing of your application. So you want to make sure that they showcase the best possible side, the best possible experience for your app. And add good captions pointing out all of the awesome features of your app for each screenshot. For mobile, similarly, piece of advice here, the mobile emulator has a screenshot tool built right into it. Really easy to use that as you're testing your app and get all of the screenshots that you want to show off for the store. Any screenshots for the Xbox? And now you'll notice I'm uploading two screenshots at the same time. And of course, I use the HoloLens emulator to create a holographic screenshot of our app as well. The other imagery is used for either promotional artwork or on previous versions, of Windows, so Windows Phone 8.1 and earlier. Promotional artwork, if your app gets featured in the store, they'll pull from this set of artwork that you upload. So if you really have a great idea and you think that this thing is really going to take off, it's worth your time to create and upload that promotional artwork. Because if you get featured in the store, the spike that I've seen in downloads for individual applications is pretty massive. If users see your app at that carousel at the top of that Windows Store app, you can get quite a big download spike. App features is a good place to just give a good synopsis for your users on what features the app has. And you can add up to 20 features and keep these short, you know, synchronizes with your OneDrive, keeps data, you know, on your desktop and your tablet. On HoloLens, you get a 360-degree world view, you know, different features like that. And this is a good place to list those, and these show up as bullets in the store app. If you have any other comments or system requirements, you can add these here. And these are shown to the users on Windows 10. Keywords are used for searchability, 7 keywords, 1 per box. And these are stuff that you'll want to really put some thought into because it can impact your discoverability. So our news app, I might want to make sure that if somebody's searching for Bloomberg, our news app pops up as well. I also want to make sure that maybe if they're searching for trending news or the latest of something, that my news app shows up. Add your copyright and trademark info. If you have any other license terms, if you have a website, make sure that's added here as well. So people who view your listing on the web can get quickly to your website to find out more information about you, your company, or your app. Once you're done, you hit save. And remember, you do have to go through this process for each of the languages that you add to your app. And the reason for that is because ideally you want to localize all of the information that's in your store listing to be in the language for the app. If somebody's viewing my app in the German store, providing them with an English listing isn't an optimal experience. So do go through the effort of localizing not just the strings in your app, but also think about how you're going to localize the descriptions, the features, and other information about your app. Having localized screenshots is also good too, so people can see really what it looks like in their language and really relate to the app. And it provides just a more attractive quality to your app versus one that might not be translated. Finally, if there's any notes for certification, this is where you put that information. A good illustration of this is already given to you by the store team. If you have a test account, if your app has to be logged into to provide an experience that a tester would want to test with, provide a username and password that they can test with here. This does not show to the user, but it provides them the ability to actually fully vet your app should it be pulled for spot check and not just to static analysis. Spot checking is done on a random basis. Steps to access any hidden or locked features, things like that. So that's kind of the big part of the submission is the store listings and the notes for certification. Once you have all of these steps complete, you can actually submit your app to the store. When you submit it to the store, it goes through a process of sending it out to the automated test and then also publishing it out to the store after any gated process you may have put in place to manually publish or to gate based on a date. If you want to check and see how your app is going to do in the store, you can, let me see if I can find this here. Once you go through the creating an app package, it provides you the option to actually run the Windows Application Certification Kit, or WAC as we like to call it. And that will actually run a series of tests on your application, which are the exact same series of tests that are run on your app in the store before it finishes certification. So if you have the resources to do it, I highly suggest that you run the WAC because it will save you a lot of headache and a lot of round with the store team should your app fail any of those certifications. It does things like memory tests, it does things like crash tests, like processor tests, just to make sure that it's not doing anything that might provide the user with a worse experience than we want to convey on the Windows platform. So you've got your app in the store, everything's going well. Maybe you come up with a couple of ideas that you think could enhance your app and make it even better. Well, the Windows Store team has you covered with add-ons. So add-ons are what other stores and other folks have called in-app purchases. And in-app purchases are actually handled a lot like apps themselves. They go through their own certification process, they go through their own submission flow. Add-ons for the Windows Store can be either consumable by and managed by the developer, consumable and managed by the store, or durable. And each of those kind of is self-explanatory based on the title. If you have a consumable that's managed by the developer, you are in charge of writing that code that keeps track of how many coins they have left, and you are in charge of making sure that that accuracy is maintained. If you don't do a good job of that, maybe handling offline scenarios or handling crashes of your app that may cause users to lose coins that they have purchased, then that's something that will be reflected in your reviews. So you want to pay really close attention to how you handle that. A store-managed consumable is kind of the best of both worlds, right? You get a consumable, but then that balance is tracked by Microsoft across all of the Windows 10 devices. And this is a brand new thing that was just announced yesterday. And so this is really cool. And if you're doing consumable add-ons, I highly suggest you look at the store-managed consumables. Durable is kind of one of those things that you would use as part of like a freemium model, where you can purchase no ads, for instance, is a very common one. For 99 cents, I'll remove the ads from the app. So the way add-ons work is you define a product ID, like for ours, maybe I'll call it no ads, and I'll say that it's a durable. Note that you can't change or delete it after you publish the add-on. Because add-ons are treated just like store submissions, you can't really delete an app from the store. You can only hide it so it can't be obtained any longer. So you can't delete or change the product ID. Keep note of this product ID because it's what you will use in your code to check and see if somebody has purchased an add-on. So once we create the add-on, this screen looks really familiar. You go through the properties, you go through the pricing and availability, and you manage the listing and the languages. The properties for an add-on are about what you would expect. They differ from an app because an add-on, of course, is not an app, but it's treated a lot like one. It's a durable product, so how long do you want it to last? The store will keep track of this for you. If you say, I want to remove ads for 30 days, you can do that. If you say, I want to remove ads forever, you can also do that. Is it any of these things? Is it a content type where maybe they're purchasing a software download or a book or storage services? And then what kind of keywords to help categorize the various add-ons that somebody could come up with? And any custom developer data that you might need forwarded on to your app when they do the purchase. So for ours, software as a service, ads, and there's no custom developer data. Next, of course, we have to define the price and availability of our add-on. This is treated exactly the same way as an app's pricing and availability is. Pick the pricing tier, pick what markets you want it to be available in, and how much you want it to cost in each of those markets. Again, the example of volatile currencies across the world. This is another thing to consider should some economic crisis happen somewhere else and you need to take care of yourself in terms of how much you're charging for apps and add-ons. You could do a sale for an add-on. Hey, for 7 days, my no ads add-on is going to be free. So this is another good way to do that. Distribution and visibility, available for purchase, maybe displayed in your listing, available for purchase, not displayed in the listing, or not available for purchase if you just don't want to use this add-on anymore. Similar to an app, you can pass it as soon as it goes through certification. Obviously, add-ons have a much lighter weight certification process, but they do go through certification just to vet descriptions and various chosen selections throughout the process here. You can publish it manually, or you can say that it's gated in order to maybe gear up for a special promotion. So we'll publish our add-on here. I'm kind of glad this happened. The store team does a pretty good job of letting you know if you fill out a section of the flow and don't do something right. So here there's an error on the page for pricing availability. It's marked as complete in yellow. So you're not going to continue on through the process. Let's go back and have a look and see what went wrong. I didn't select a price tier for my no ads. That makes complete sense. And we're green. After that, you define the listing that it looks like in the store. This data is what comes along when you query the store API for the available in-app purchases for a user. So obviously, since we call these add-ons and since we also call these in-app purchases, the store that is shown to your user is inside your app. So there will be a page in your app where you'll show all of the in-app purchases that are available, their titles, their descriptions, their costs. And this is the page where you define all of that. So if your app supports multiple languages, ideally you want to show them the description and the title and even the currency in their local format. So let's choose a different English just because I only speak English. Let's choose English. Great, where's it at here? All right, let's choose this English here. And then we can also, you can do this. Let's see if it gets it here. You can filter it down if you know exactly what you're looking for. So we'll save our store listing languages. After we've saved the languages, then we'll have the opportunity to fill out the listing. And it'll show as incomplete. We've not completed these two. So let's have a look at what the store listing looks like for an add-on. It's pretty simple, right? You give it a title, you give it a description, and you give it an icon. Remember, we've already defined the price in an earlier step. And I might give some icon to it. And because we're not going to fill out the other listing, we can go back into the Manage Store Listing Languages, and we could remove the other one we won't fill out. But again, something to think about as you localize your app into various languages, think about localizing the add-ons. Think about localizing the app listing. Something that I do when I'm developing apps is I'll keep those descriptions, the change log, the release notes that you do. I'll keep the descriptions of the in-app purchases or the add-ons. I'll keep those all in a OneNote on the side, and I'll keep track of all of the translations for all of those as well. As I use third-party services to do all the translations, it's really easy for me then to take all that text and send it off to the third-party service and get everything back. So that's an idea. Once we are done, you submit the add-on to the store just as you did your app. And I'm getting notified that I don't have my tax and payout information in here, of course, because it's a test account. So the next thing to think about as an app developer, we make money really in one of two ways. Well, one of three ways. Either people pay for the app outright, we have ads in the app, or they buy things to enhance the app. So the other piece of this, we've talked about paying for the app outright. We've talked about add-ons in the app for which you can get more money. But the next thing is monetizing with ads, and this is very popular. And so monetization with ads is also possible through the Dev Center. Using the Windows Store Engagement SDK in Visual Studio, you can put ad controls in your app and show ads either from other store apps. So we call those, we call those in-network ads. We have in-house ads, which are ads that are between your applications alone. So you can actually advertise for My App A, My App B, and My App C within each other. And those are all free for you to do. The in-network ads are also all free for you to do. And then, of course, we have the external ads, like Microsoft's Bing Ad Network. So the Microsoft Ad Network is our ad content provider that you can use inside Windows Store apps and UWPs. So the way these work is really simple configuration in this in the Dev Center here. Let's see. When you put the add control in your app, you actually connect it with a service in Visual Studio, and that process registers it with the Dev Center as part of your app's listing, and then you can see the list of adds and add controls and control what shows in them for each add control within your app. So let's see if I can get back to monetization here. All right, so we can configure ad mediation here. The reason this area is not populated is because I have not actually dropped an ad control into the app yet, and so it doesn't know that there are any ads. When you do this, this area shows up and gives you the option to have ads either 100% from one network, split across multiple networks, or 100% from a network, but a backup network in case it couldn't find an ad or couldn't fill it. Helps you to increase fill rate. So as you add the ad control to your apps, come in here and look at the Windows Ad Mediation portal and really fine-tune that to make sure that you get the best fill rate possible. If your app is geared towards children under the age of 13, you have to elect for COPPA compliance. You can choose whether you want to show Microsoft affiliate ads, community ads, or if you need an ad unit. And so last but not least, there are a couple different ways that you can promote your app in the Windows Store. The first one that is probably the highest impact is the one that where your app just gets featured in the store. And that happens to really high quality apps with high downloads and high ratings. And that is why that promotional artwork on your store listing is so important. But a couple of the other ways to get promoted is to start an ad campaign. And recently, if you did Windows app development in the past, we had PubCenter. That has now merged with the store, and you now promote your app, get your ad campaign all set up, pay for your ads, define what your ad looks like, all within the store. So they've put it all in one place, the reports are all here, the control is all here, and it works really, really well. To do that, you just hit Get Started and go ahead and define your ad campaign today and define how much you want to pay. The other way that you can promote your app is with promotional codes. So if you're very active on social media and maybe you're doing a new release of your app that completely redesigns it, version 2.0, maybe you could say for the first 50 retweets, you'll get a promotional code. And promotional codes are available both for add-ons and for apps themselves. So for any, I'm in my $1 million app listing, I can choose either my app or my in-app product, my add-on. And I can give it an order name. This is just for my knowledge. I can give a set of codes that can each be used once, or one code that can be used multiple times, and the number of times a code can be redeemed. So this is a way to control either I can email it to friends and family that might want the app for free, or I can post it on Twitter and say, for 50 people, here you go, free app. And whether they're active immediately and whether they expire after 6 months. When you do this, you'll get a Excel spreadsheet or a CSV that has the promotional code and the link for your users to redeem it. And the link takes them right into the Windows Store. Upon redemption and upon login to their MSA, their Microsoft account, and redemption of the promo code, they'll go straight to the store listing and download either the app or the add-on. Works pretty seamlessly. And of course, we already talked about sale pricing. So I do have one question from Jason. Is there a requirement documentation for art, screenshots, in terms of format and pixel dimension, other than directly in the dev portal? They used to have a design doc that would guide you in developing all of the various screen sizes and icon sizes for your app. That's been largely replicated in the dev portal. So just by using what's shown in the portal as far as the dimensions goes, and using PNGs, I found works just as well. You can add transparency and also get the high depth. So PNGs tend to work really well, and the transparency does come through. You can see in my app listing in the upper left, the the actual app icon is a transparent with the four from our news app. So the only thing that I want to point out now is a blog post that was done by the store team, and it highlights a bunch of new features that just came out yesterday. So if we could show that slide. Perfect. So we just had a ton of new stuff announced yesterday from the store team, who's been really hard at work this summer and earlier this year, that will be really important for the Xbox One UWP devs out there. Gradual rollout is super awesome. Flighting is also really cool. So I really encourage you to explore this blog post and also explore the Dev Center portal as you move forward in your submission. And don't be afraid to ask questions both to us in the comments and on Twitter. Thank you very much.